Hello, everybody. Code Pen Radio. I have Rachel on this week. Hi, Rachel.
Hi. How are you going?
We're all fired up. We just had our all hands meeting, so our voices are already working.
Warmed up.
Yeah. We're going to talk about billing this week, which is that exciting to some people? I would think it is. I mean, people like to make money with their web apps, right? So you got to do it, but maybe not like super exciting to everybody all the time, but I don't know. I'm pretty excited about it because it's worked out pretty good for us. That's why we all have jobs and stuff for the most part. So that's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's how we get paid. That's the motivation that keeps you going when you're in the depths of billing, going, oh my God, it's so annoying. You're like, well, if this doesn't work, you don't get paid. So
yeah,
just got to keep going.
Pretty true. So I guess there's like kind of a lot of little aspects to this. Some of it is like, you know, what's happening in the new editor and connecting it to other work we've been doing in the past and like a desire for better UX and some new pages on the site. And there's a lot of entry points here, but lately we've been talking a lot about the 2.0 editor. So I would just mention up top that this is related to that, in that one big desire we had was to make sure that like the experience of upgrading in the new editor A works and that uses our modern APIs. So we had these like a GraphQL API forever. We've been forever porting it to Go, and pretty much any page that's on our new stack, you know, is using the Go API and not the Ruby API. And of course, that includes the new editor. So like, we didn't want to like reach into the past. I mean, I guess it's maybe somehow possible we could have kept using the old APIs, but we didn't want to. We wanted to move those APIs to Go. So there was some work there first, but I think you were kind of prodding me to say that, like, well, first we kind of changed, I don't know, the model behind how billing works. Like, what's that all about? I mean, I know we have multiple different plans. We have teams. Is that all related to this?
Yeah. I mean, it's more related to keeping our data in sync with the payment processes we use. So at CodePen, we use two different payment processes. One is Stripe, and that's probably 80 to 90% of our customers. Like, it's a huge chunk. And then we also use PayPal, but that we use Braintree as the processing API to get PayPal customers. And ever since CodePen sort of started, they started charging customers, and it's always kind of been a problem of trying to solve, of like, how do you keep enough billing data in your database that matches all the data that is kept in Stripe's database, for example, or Braintree? Like, or so we've had a few different attempts at trying to like map all our customers and their subscriptions and like their processor and that information like into a data structure that we also keep in sync with the payment processes. And the second go round at doing it, it got quite convoluted and complicated with lots of relationships. And then more recently, we tried to simplify it again and turn what was three different tables into like one table that and these days we keep very little information like in our tables. We keep just enough to be able to know who to go to, either Stripe or Braintree, to ask them the information about our customers, because what we found, it was just too hard to keep things like dates or prices and timings and rates and expirations and all this stuff that's you know, tied to a customer and a plan. Is like, it's too hard to just try and keep that when we can just rely on the processor for handling that stuff, including payment information. Like, we've never stored people's card details, because that's why you have a processor, so you don't have to store people's actual payment information. But yeah,
so there's already some data that we definitely don't have, but we're not necessarily trying to store you need some stuff in our own database, right? You need to know if the user has an active subscription or not, because you need to know
if they have an active subscription, who the subscription's with, and like the ID to identify them, the customer, and the subscription. So you can use the processor API to get any other information you need. Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good point. That was like a lesson learned later, is that it's tempting to, when you're building out a billing page or something, to be like, oh, we'll just ask our own DB for like all your payments and all your, I don't know, when you're, the date that you're going to be rebilled. You don't have to do that. You can just ask on the fly with a little client side request or whatever, and it'll just tell you.
Yeah, it's actually server side. So like we still hit our API for that information, but then server side, the Go server will hit the Stripe API for information like that. And so we still have to keep things like subscription status, like, you know, whether it's active, whether it's expiring, whether it's expired, all these things. We keep those in sync with Stripe. But Stripe and Braintree have, like they have an ability to like basically call back to your server when they make a change to those things. So if you expire out of Stripe because you didn't pay, for example, they call our server, and we have some, we set up some endpoints for them to call to tell our database, okay, this subscription's expired right now. So that's the main thing we keep in sync.
Yeah, that's nice too, because it means we can use the, we're going to use the Stripe database. Like if we got to go in there and cancel somebody's pro account or it's a fraud account or something, we can just do it in Stripe and just not even think about
it. And it will sync back to our, our data, which is, that's kind of nice. That's what you need, because that's the most important thing is, you know, the status of the subscription. You only want to give people a pro subscription if they've actually paid for it. So that's the key thing.
It can be a security concern too, because it can unlock certain abilities that are more dangerous than others or whatever. Not that anything's like too super mission critical, but it allows you to, for example, make a website that doesn't have any CodePen UI around it, which might be used for phishing or who knows what else.
Yeah, probably the main concern with pro users is they can upload images, and that, you know, people do some nasty stuff if they're, if you're the wrong people can upload images to the internet. So yeah, we don't want that.
So we changed this model, you know, a theory being, can we store as little as possible in one table to get away with this? And then we'll just call out to the APIs when we need it, which is really nice. So we changed that model. We have this new table. That's nice. And that way, when we're porting APIs, we're not porting them to the old model. We can just think about the new model only. Was that the idea?
Yeah, well, we still, we've actually got both models running still on production, but we keep them in sync. Just because we have old Rails code that still deals with the old model, and we haven't updated it. But anything new, it deals with, we call it the billing permission table. So anything new we write, we deal with billing permissions, not with the old three table situation. Yeah.
So now we have new fancy APIs, and these new APIs are cleaner and they represent the future for us and all this stuff. And now we can like use them. So first of all, we're thinking like, okay, we're not going to, I don't think we ever even shipped an alpha really of the new editor, unless you could upgrade inside of it. I mean, maybe that's not quite right, but certainly we weren't like inviting a lot of outside people to the editor until there was a way for them to upgrade. Not that we were trying to bleed our beta users, but we're like, dude, we got to have like a path.
Yeah,
for
I
them.
Think most of our very early users were pro, like a very sort of alpha testers were pro. And then, yeah, from very early on, yeah, we made sure like if, you know, a free user was to end up in the alpha or the beta, that they had the option to upgrade from in the editor, because it's so much better when you upgrade, you know, the editor is so much better. So you want to have give them the opportunity to do
like,
it.
You know, don't be mad at us, but we gave a lot of features in there are pro features. I mean, that's kind of that's where we're at. So please mm-hmm. enjoy our pro features. And I was, yeah. you know, I don't know how perfectly we got there, but I think we did pretty good. Is that I have, you know, this ideal upgrade experience in my mind is that there's these little like friction points that users hit, or like, I don't know what the right term is to call them, but it's like a moment. I think of it as like, oh, this app can do this thing that I need it to do. I'm hitting that moment right now. I'm about to pull mm-hmm. my credit card out or whatever, like approve my one password autofill or something for a credit card. I'm willing to do it because this app is about to provide me some value. I want that experience to happen. I don't want them to have to like leave and go somewhere else or break their flow and all this. The ideal experience is like, oh, a little pop-up comes up and you fill out very little information, as little as we can possibly ask you mm-hmm. while being responsible. And then you click the button and the happy path is that it all goes through and your account is upgraded and you can immediately do the thing that you are trying to do in the editor, which is deploy the site or upload a file or have more files than your previous plan allowed or invite a friend to the page. There's all these moments, you know, like that exact moment you're like, God, I wish I could ask for some help on this pen and have somebody else kind of have ownership over it as well. Or I'm about to interview them on the phone or something. Boom, that's a moment. They upgrade, good to go. So that mm-hmm. I wanted that to happen in a modal. So in my mind, billing and a billing modal is like, I don't know. I was never able to detach them. I'm like, modals.
Yeah, you know? Definitely. And like we had a look at other SaaS apps and their flows, and they definitely were doing modals like in situ mm-hmm. in terms of like collecting your payment information. There's a lot of modals in situ rather than taking you somewhere else
to
purchase. So it's definitely a thing SaaS apps do. Yeah. One huge change with our new modals is we use Stripe Elements, which is basically Stripe Elements is just some like UI that you can sort of get Stripe to inject for you into the page, which is basically, you know, like a credit card form, but it's not just credit card. It allows people to pay in other ways too, like their Google Pay or Apple Pay or just, you know, every way to pay you can imagine, depending on your region. Stripe will like put these options in. And it's one thing that's nice about it is it's very familiar, like as in like people have seen this Stripe payment form many times before because Stripe controls so much of like e-commerce on the internet. Like people are so used to seeing that form. There's like a comfort level there with like that form and that presentation versus like, no offense to our Rails payment forms, but they look like they were made in 2012, which they were. Like it's just kind of like old.
Sure, we could have like, gotten updated like, some styles in there, but we just never did.
Yeah, it's just got a vibe that's like, I don't know, me, I'm like, who made this form? Like it looks like sus because it's not the polished Stripe form I'm used to. It looks very like hand coded, and that sort of can set off like people hesitate for a second when they see some like form that some dev has clearly just built themselves, you know, like, and says, give me your credit card information. So like it does make people pause.
Exactly. You don't see that very often these days. You just don't.
I see it on older SaaS apps like ourselves, like apps that have been around for a long time. Like I pay for so many software subscriptions. It's crazy. And like some of them are from, you know, like apps that have been around for years and years and years. You come across these like old hand-coded forms like ours. But it's way more common these days to be presented with a Stripe form. And we just wanted to
It
just makes people feel better. They're like, oh, I know this. I can put my credit card in here.
It's almost better if it doesn't match your design system perfectly. You know, I almost prefer that it looks more like Stripe.
It actually looks pretty good. Yeah. Like we did a dark mode version of it because that's, you know, we're dark mode site by default. So it still looks great. It still looks like us, but also it looks like Stripe. It looks like the Stripe form. So
it does. It does.
Yeah.
So and it's not, we did that on purpose. I think that's funny is I bet some people reach for Stripe Elements because they're like, ooh, free UI. I don't have to code this part. And I'm like, I don't care about that. I'm happy to code a form. I don't care. But I intentionally want it to look like Stripe.
Yeah. It's kind of annoying to integrate, to be honest. Like, it's just with React and, you know, everything else. Like, it's just, we definitely went through some stuff
we did
trying
it was
to
tricky
make that Stripe form work and be performant. You got to wait for the Stripe API to finish doing its business before you can render the form
you
and
do.
Like there's just, you know, like, so we sort of had to work through some optimization stuff for that, trying to get this form to appear quickly and just, yeah, it wasn't as simple as like, oh, just stick it in and you're done, no work required, you know. But so that was, it was probably like more annoying than just doing it yourself. But the main reason we wanted it was for that look, for that peace of mind for people, like, oh, this is Stripe. I know what it is. And another thing we added, which is huge, is like before this point, and this Stripe enables us to do this, the Stripe forms, is that like we say you're a starter customer and you're like, you know what, I need developer. Like, you know,
that's our lowest plan and our second highest plan.
Yeah. So you want to upgrade. We already have like a script subscription for you with a valid card, right? We've got your valid card on file. In our old forms, we would ask you to put a new credit card in or like re-enter your credit card like any time you wanted to make a purchase, which is crazy when we already have that information versus like saying, hey, here's your card. Like, you chill to use this one. And like, sure. Like that's what people want, right? Like they're like,
of course it is.
I've paid you for starter. I want to give you a couple more bucks for developer. Like, yes, just use the card.
Oh my God. Can you imagine if we're like in our Cloudflare account? I was just like moving some domains around and had to charge something in Cloudflare. Could you imagine if they're like, just put in a new credit card?
Yeah. They're like, oh, we just need your credit card. Like, and then we'll go ahead and do that for you. And that's what we were doing in the old form. So, like, while I've been testing, there's like, seems to be, I don't know what that limit is. There seems to be a limit between, like, because I often test, you know, you're an individual and then you buy a whole team of five people. Stripe won't let you reuse a card for like an individual subscription to buy like five times as many stuff. Like, you do have, like, there must be some limit to like as to how much money you can like put on the same card without them like entering the card. I don't know what that is, but I've definitely
Funny.
Hit it. Yeah.
I bet it is like a fraud prevention thing. Like, if you have you get somebody to sign up for some $1 subscription and then the company later changes it to
$10,000. And then the company's just charging you like huge amounts of money on this card. I think that's to protect consumers.
Interesting. I didn't know that.
Going from starter to developer or starter to pro.
Not
like
a problem.
Sorry, super. Like, yeah.
Yeah.
We've got your card. It's easy.
Yeah.
So that was huge change too.
And it all happens in a little modal and it just works and it's so great. I do remember another challenge with it though, is like you mentioned at the top of this show, we take PayPal too, which is, you know, much to all of our chagrin, 10% or so of our users. That's not, we can't just not do that.
Yeah,
that's
somewhere
just
between
sucks.
10 and 20. So it's,
yeah.
And it's some people in some countries, some regions, like they can't use Stripe, like PayPal is like the only option for them. So like it's kind of unfair to people to not, to just say, nah, you're shit out of luck because you can't like, you know. You can't do Stripe, you know, doesn't seem fair.
I was almost on team like, all right, let's just do this. Let's take the hit. Well, we're redoing it. No more PayPal. PayPal sucks, whatever. Even though it doesn't really, like I still use it even sometimes. But I was like, anybody that, it's not like you're going to lose necessarily 10 to 20%. Some of those people would have been like, oh, fine, I'll use a credit card.
Fine, I'll use Stripe, yeah. But you will lose some. And
you absolutely will.
We love our subscribers. We don't want to lose them.
any like while I was on my charge to do this, I like joined some like meetup or something, and I think it was German based, and like I watched somebody like during the call upgrade to pro, and they used PayPal, and I was like, oh man. all right, we got to keep that. So it tries to like, there's a little bit of UI that we like basically jack on top of the form that kind of lets you pick PayPal, but it doesn't look weird. You know, it looks like it's kind of faked to be integrated with Stripe Elements, sort of kind of.
It looks pretty good. It's sort of like, I think it looks good. You can't tell, like, it's just been strapped together with, you know, sticky tape and peanut butter, like, underneath the hood. Like, it's sort of looks like it's supposed to be there when it's not. One thing that's a bit weird about that Braintree PayPal flow is that just, you're in our payment modal, and then when you click that button, it opens another modal, like to enter your PayPal details. So it's like a double modal situation.
But it's not like a nice on page one. It's one of those like opens a whole nother browser window.
It's like a new window, like a new window modal. Yeah. So it's a bit
awkward. That's just how they roll. We have no control over that. It's a bit awkward, but whatever. And people still use it, and that's fine. So now we're supporting both payment providers. Of course, I waste no opportunity when a Stripe person emails and be like, "Hey, I'm your new account representative," or whatever. Like, we've ever needed to talk to one ever. I believe not. But I'll happily respond and be like, "Yes, there is totally one thing you can do for us. You can make PayPal work through freaking Stripe, please." Why can't these powers that be get together? I'm not trying to get rid of PayPal.
There was talk of them buying PayPal, wasn't there? Like, is this news of them potentially buying PayPal recently?
Just as good, though. Just work together.
Yeah.
Somehow.
Yeah, it would be one of the, I think, in my opinion, the most annoying part of software development, like just the coding part of it, is working with third-party APIs. Like, I hate it. Like, and we have to work with two different APIs in our billing code because we have to, and you know, they're different. So we have all this code to, you know, to be like, oh, if you're dealing with Stripe, then you do it this way. And if you're dealing with Braintree, you do it this way. And it's like, adds so much complexity, takes twice as long to change anything or QA anything. It's just really annoying. So it would be fabulous if we could just have one API.
I would pay a higher percentage. Like, maybe that's how Stripe makes money off of this, you know, make it expensive to use. At least to clean up our code base, it would be worth it. All right. Okay. So that's fun. Continuing down the UX path a little bit. One thing that we just never had that it just, I know these, some of these things just feel so nonsensical to me now, but you have to remember that code, we're old. And we're trying to be new. I don't know. Not really, but every SaaS app in the world has
old. We're ancient.
I know, but it doesn't mean that our app isn't
SaaS and startups.
Hot and cool. I know, whatever. Fellow kids. My app still is awesome. So yeah, you love it. Every SaaS app in the last 10 years, or I don't know why I caveat it like that. They all have a pricing page. One of the main links is services, whatever. They're all the same. There's always a link and it says pricing.
/pricing.
Click it and it tells you what the pricing of the app is. We never had that. We never once had it. It was called like accounts or something. And then I think it even had a sub page in there. Of course, we had a page that explained what our pro plans was. It just wasn't called pricing. It wasn't @pricing.
It was like accounts /sign up or something. It was like a sign up.
Oh my God.
Like sign up. And then we'll show you the plans before you sign up situation. Yeah. And that was like a pricing table there.
Yeah. So that part was okay. But we wanted to have like a really cool looking pricing page. Like it needed some design work for sure, just like these old sign up forms did. So we wanted to design that. We wanted to put it on the new stack. We wanted it to deal with the new APIs, well, all this stuff, but just have a normal pricing page with a normal URL that people can go to. And we designed it and it took a while to get out, but that was kind of a part of the billing story, was just having that URL, which we have now, and it's great. So what was shipping of all this like? Remember, we had little milestones, I think. It's not like it all went out at once. I think like the modals were out first and then other stuff.
The modals were first because the in-app editor modals only prompt you to upgrade in your, like in a user context. Whereas if you want to sign up for a CodePen team, that is via like the pricing page, for example, or the old account.
You're not
sign
doing
up
that in the editor. Yeah.
Yeah. So that pricing page took longer to ship because we had to handle the team's scenario and like migrate from our old way of handling sort of the old API, billing API. Well, the old API in general was very context dependent, like very, it was always like, are you in your user or your team context? So for people who aren't aware, like when you own a team or belong to a team in CodePen, you have the concept of you're in your user context and you're acting as the user, or you're in your team context and you're acting as a team and as part of the team. And that's helpful when you're like creating pens and stuff. Like instead of just like every time you create a pen, we say to you like, oh, who do you want to create it as? Do you want to create it as you or your team? Like we just have this sort of context that you live in, and it's in your little user bar on the top right. You sort of in your user context, and you can switch to be like, I'm going to be in my team now. And then everything you create is in the team, or everything you do, basically you're acting as the team. So that worked well for all that sort of stuff. But our old API also had the billing baked into like any sort of like upgrading or billing changes or that, or even your account settings. There was a point where
you had to be in the right context.
You had to be, it was only for your context that it would, the APIs would return. So instead of saying, oh, I'm Chris and like the API give me literally, they give me my stuff and all the teams I belong to, it couldn't do that. It was like, give me the thing, give me the settings, or give me the billing information, or give me the, and it would just hand back. Like if you're a new team, it would be your team. And if you're, you're in your user, it'd be user. And that's just confusing for people. Like they, you know, they want to be able to see both certain situations, like account settings or billing. They want to be able to see both. At the same time, they want to be able to see their individual users' stuff, and they want to see the teams mm-hmm. they belong to mm-hmm. or that they own. So we sort of had to do this migration of all the sort of sign up and billing and sign up for teams and all this stuff, and in a way where you're acknowledging this is like an individual with their own stuff and they're dealing with a team and having both of those pieces of information. And that's why the pricing page took longer to ship, because there was lots of work that needed to be done to sort of to pull like API stuff out of this being locked into a context at all times.
Yeah, which was definitely the right move. So you just get more information now, and it's just we can just be more clear. I think we worked on that a lot during the upgrading process and stuff like that. It's just, it's very obvious, like you're upgrading this team from 4 users to 7 users, or you are currently this plan and you are moving to this plan.
Yeah, in our old team flows, used to happen people would like somehow sign up for another team when they were just trying to increase the users on the team they already had, because they'd sort of like go through the team sign up flow and then end up in this new team context, and like there's no context of the team you already own, and so like they would accidentally do stuff like sign up for a new team when they just wanted to change their team and just stuff like that. And like this new way means like we can be like, hey, you own this team, like even if you're not in that context, like even if you're in user context, where like you have this team and you're trying to upgrade this team, like that you own, right, kind of thing. Yeah, so it's much better.
I think we still have context though for creation and stuff, and it kind of works fine, but I think we are still kind of dreaming of a full removal of all context. Because I don't think it's serving the world that well anymore.
Yeah, one day we'd be able to figure out a better way to handle that situation where you're creating something new who you're going to create it as, kind of thing.
Yeah. Right, right. And part of it is like, sure, the creation is very important to me, but also like, what if you do it wrong? You know, there needs to be a way out of it, which kind of leads us to being able to transfer the ownership of pens, which is like a whole world that we haven't gotten to. Pretty fun. Okay, so all this is live, by the way, and that pricing page is live, and we can link to it from wherever, which feels very satisfying. If you ever want to like compare plans, we kind of try to do it in the modals. And for example, we're trying not to bother you too much. So for example, if you're not pro and you need to be pro, we're not like, you should look at all three of these plans and consider each one individually. We really just be like, we'll just put you on the lowest pro plan. Mm-hmm. And it's true that we sell way more of the lowest plan there. Maybe we're hurting ourselves, but I kind of doubt it. The idea is that don't give them too many choices. You can absolutely look at all the choices and pick the one that's right for you. But I think it's easier if we just suggest the plan that's going to immediately deal with your situ. And we do that. So you just kind of get that lowest plan. And then if you need to upgrade after that, then fine. You know, you can do that later.
Yeah. And with the new system, it's very easy to just upgrade, go up the next level. And like have it be prorated, no big deal. Like
you literally press a button.
We don't ask for your card again. Like just like it with the old way, it would have been annoying. Like for people to be told to get the starter and then they want, you know, 50 files in their pen or forget what the actual limit is for developer, but they, you know, they now they need more and then it's like, oh, here, give us your card again. Like it would have been annoying. Like so. Now we've sort of streamlined that. It's very easy to just move people up as they hit those limits and they need more. Yeah. They can just go higher. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. I think we'll see more and more of that as the new editor becomes the only editor. Mm-hmm. So then, okay, there's pricing page, but then also there's a / billing page, and it's kind of a funny page because it's kind of like an unmodaled modal, essentially. Like we designed billing to be so like modal focused that the billing page is kind of like the modal, just not in a modal.
On a page. Yeah, just centered in a page. Yeah.
With like a CodePen logo at the top of it, basically. But what's kind of cool is that now we have this page that the job of that page is the same stuff. It's like changing plans and changing payment methods. And so the / billing page can do everything related to your billing. But it's all on the new API, which means that even when we're over in Rails, if there's a button that says like change plans, we can just boot you over to the billing page and do it there, which is great, which means those embarrassing forms that we were making fun of ourselves for are largely, if not completely gone, right?
Yeah, like I think the super duper old ones that used to get through account signup, I don't think you can get them to them anymore. Like I think they're gone. In terms of, we're not linking to them. There's no, I think we redirect account sign up to / pricing now. So,
We're like totally done.
You can still get the old modals in the old pen editor on the homepage. If you happen to trigger a pro, go pro in that, you'll get the old Rails modals, which look a bit more modern. They've been styled up a bit. So they don't look as old as the old forms, but they still don't look as slick as the Stripe ones.
Right.
Yeah.
And we could iframe something in there or something, or really weirdly wire it up to only hit a new API. But like there's no desire to do that. Like that's gonna happen when those pages move to the new stack, they'll just automatically get the better stuff. And not a big deal, right?
Yeah, the plan is for people to move away from the old pen editor. So no need to, we'll just leave those forms there while they're there. But eventually there'll be a time where nobody's reaching for that anymore.
I should mention, like, we don't have to go all into this, but this new simplification is kind of nice. It allows us to fiddle around with pricing, not that we like have big plans to do that or anything, but like, we certainly can. It's a heck of a lot easier than it used to be, which is very nice.
Because of the way we change things in terms of, we used to have like user pricing and team pricing, but now it's kind of like teams just multiple quantities of user pricing, right? Like that's what a team is. So it simplified the pricing model, which means, so if we need to change prices, we just change three prices and that's it, you know, like starter, developer, super, the end. You do have to change them on both processes, which does double the time to change the prices, but like you know, it's a lot easier than it used to be. So we can just fiddle with prices if we want to.
Yeah, that's kind of cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember, you know, in the very early days of this, it was kind of a dream to like maybe only have one pro plan, or like maybe two, but maybe three is a little bit too many. We're trying to reduce choices and stuff. It turned out that, you know, after like smashing that into reality, that was harder to pull off than we wanted it to, because there are some things that like kind of make sense to be tiered and all that. And we want like an opportunity for higher plans for accounts that literally actually cost us more money. Mm-hmm. You're like, okay, well, that's going to have to be there. And it'll probably like continue to be true as we fiddle with AI and stuff. No definitive plans there, but like, I don't know, that stuff costs money. So it might have to cost you money. Pretty good. I will say that, you know, not that I'm not ready to, nor do we generally do this, but like all these changes, like they worked super well, like way exceeded internal expectations on how, if this was worth doing. Like sometimes it's like, you got to do a bunch of API crap and a bunch of horrible third party work or whatever, just because you're trying to modernize and like make sure your app is like in good shape going forward. Because it just has to be. But then when you're done, you're like, okay, well, off just, you know, what actually matters is like marketing and stuff. Nope.
Yeah.
This super worked. It was highly successful in terms of honestly just selling more accounts. Just this work only.
It's funny, as a company, because we're run by engineers, we're pretty much all engineers working there. Like we can get into the nitty gritty of like, oh, like, make the product work so good, like, you know, just I'll make it the perfect product and look how good it is. Look how good this CodePen editor is and that. But sometimes like the difference in terms of like revenue is just making your upgrade form experience, like put less friction in there. like that whole Amazon thing of like, oh, look, if we just remove all the steps, like people purchase, like just that sort of simple stuff is what like really drives sales versus like you making like the perfect, like obviously you want to like create value for people so they want to upgrade, but in terms of getting them to actually upgrade, sometimes like the biggest levers to pull are in that, like in that upsell moment, or in that, you know, in that UI to upgrade, or that flow to upgrade, like
because we really the flow, it makes a huge difference. You think it depends on the app quite a bit.
Yeah.
But we have this, we're in this unique position. We've talked about this many times on the show where there's like a lot of people use the app, like a lot. We have plenty of eyeballs and usage and less like holding on to those pro users. So obviously some of our work is designed around that, but we have plenty of people. And now, honestly, with these new changes, and I think it's largely because of Stripe Elements, like there's this whole idea that you have to like make a plan, or I forget the exact word for it, but you have to like make a thing and then you feed the thing to the Stripe Elements.
You have to set up a pending subscription. Like you have to set up a subscription for the customer, and it's sort of in this pending state. And that's what Stripe uses to make the form work.
Before you even see the form.
So you end up with like, end up with like thousands of pending subscriptions for everyone who's like looking at an upgrade modal.
Which is kind of cool, because then you see like that particular user, they looked, they didn't buy.
But they didn't actually buy. Yeah.
Yeah. Which is like interesting data for a company to have. You know, it's all, it does feel weird because your Stripe feels like kind of all junked up with all these $0 subscriptions.
Yeah. It can mess with the stats a little bit because it'll be like, oh, look how many new subscriptions we had that moment of like, what the hell? Why did it like 100x in January? Like, it was because we like started using these forms, but they weren't active subscriptions. They were just like, pending subscriptions.
And this is attached to why you were saying it can be slow a little bit. So you click another button that says, oh, I don't want the starter plan, I want the developer plan. Stripe behind the scenes is...
Yeah, and then it's got to set up a new subscription.
Crafting a little subscription before it will update the form.
Yeah.
Whatever. That seems like... It feels like that should be faster, but, you know, what are you going to do?
Yeah, it's sort of you got to pay that time when you actually... When you enter your credit card details and hit go, it's really fast in terms of like oh, sweet, mm-hmm. you're done.
Because like, you've paid the time up front.
Yeah, because of the setup costs, like, at the start. Yeah.
That's cool. I would almost trade it to be the other way if we could, you know, like, after you've entered your credit card.
You don't want to make people sit and wait to see the form, but we
no,
did.
It's not
we
did, that bad.
It's not as bad. It's pretty quick. I'd say it's pretty quick.
Yeah.
So, yeah. These days, yeah.
Yeah, pretty fun. What was I going to say about that? I guess maybe that's it, really. I mean, future plans for us, just like we're, you know, we did a lot on this and it's, I feel like there's a little bit of a pin in it at the moment. Like, woo, you know, did all the bulk of the good stuff, but not like every single thing is done. You know, there might be like, I don't know, new stackizing the settings pages or something so that it's 100% on the new API over there. And then I think there's a good amount of crap with Teams left, especially like Teams sign up. I think we just punted on for now, but that should be reevaluated.
Team sign up's fully moved over now. So it's all, oh, it's good. All in the new stuff. Yeah.
But yeah. Not when you're like picking a team name, you know, like that.
Oh, yes. That's we kind of like, yeah, we sort of like start on pricing. Then we send you to Rails to do like create your team. Then we send you back to the like the new stack to actually enter your payment details. Yeah. So we could
like
fix
big
that
deal.
Page.
That's fine. But certainly we could do a little bit more there. That's cool. Yeah, we do need to think about teams a little bit. I think that multiple of teams is kind of fine. And I think at one point it was like the middle tier and then we made it the highest tier because it would be kind of weird that you could be on a team where your personal account had like higher permissions than your team did. And I was like, no, teams should just be the highest account. But then I think we maybe regret that slightly and that I actually want teams to be like very nicely priced so people actually do it. Because to be frank, we don't sell a ton of themes and it would be nice if we did.
Because they are super. Teams are by default super, which is our highest priced plan. Right.
That's like
so
a little bit
in
new.
In the future, we would want to just let you choose a tier like for your
just
team.
Pick your tier.
Maybe a starter team or a developer team or a super team. And that will be easier to do now. With the changes we've made to our pricing, to our data model, like we can do that.
Yeah, that I would like to do more because, you know, from a business perspective, it seems like, selling more teams is like obviously a win. So when you can tie work to that, like upgrading the page where you pick your team name is a little hard to prioritize over something that just very obviously makes you money.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Because we don't sell a lot of teams. We'd also have to work on the flow for selling teams. Like we don't do a lot to be like push teams. Like it's not really something in that where like, hey, you should sign up for a team. Did you know you could sign up for a team? It's really not a thing we push from a
No. And we also have this. I think if you pick a team name pretty early in the process, which is nice and fine. I think the idea behind it was like once you've done that, you feel some kind of compunction to finish checking out.
But even to get to that
but
page
you don't
for
have
the team
to.
Name. There's not really much on the site sending you to that page. Like we're sending people to pricing. That we've got like a team/teams. I think here's one of the things you can do on Copen. You can own a team, but there's really not a lot around the site. You know, sending you down the path of signing up for a team. So I imagine there's people on Copen who have no idea that's even an option.
No, not really. Yeah, that could be better. But then there's that whole idea that you can do that step and then not pay. And now you have this weird orphan team that you can still switch into context of and stuff. It just doesn't have any permissions. That's like a weird state. And like, I think we either want to embrace that state more and be like, oh yeah, teams are just free. And then to do anything with the team, you got to upgrade to it or stop that state entirely.
The way to tighten that up would be to... We, instead of like creating a team in the database when you enter all that information, we just store it in the cache or whatever. And then it's like, that team isn't created until we have like the payment information, you know? It's like the team's not real until like you've paid for it.
I think I like that better instead of embracing the free team concept because like I don't know how much value free teams have.
The free team thing is weird. Like it is strange.
Yeah.
I don't know why we have that. But anyway, like that would be something
it's kind of like an accident, I think. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, sounds good. We have a plan. let's execute on it very slowly.
We've got a new editor to launch first.
Yeah, we do. We're still working on that. I mean, it's obviously it's like in public beta, and everybody who's listening to this is absolutely free to use it, and it's absolutely awesome and the coolest thing we've ever built. But it's still, I think as we speak, that little beta label's still on there, and that's coming off pretty soon as we chuck through these launch steps. Okay, folks, thanks for listening. Thanks for being on Rach, and we'll see you all next week.
Thank you. Bye.